Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome.
We've just launched our third season of The Stacks, and I've made a few changes. And one of the changes I'm most excited about is that we're now partnered with Libro.fm. Libro.fm is a website that lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your local independent bookstore. As we all figure out ways to support small businesses, Libro.fm is making that super easy for you. They have over 150,000 titles for you to choose from, which means you have the same variety as that other audiobook company, but you get to be a part of a completely different story. Libro.fm has made it easy for you to find great audiobook recommendations, including playlists from the New York Times, booksellers across the country, and even me. That's right, The Stacks has a playlist of my favorite audiobooks on Libro.fm, and you can find that in the link in the show notes. Listeners of The Stacks can get three audiobooks for the price of one when you go to Libro.fm and use the code THESTACKS at checkout, or shop through the link in our show notes. With each listen, you can take pride in knowing you're supporting your local bookstore. We're back with another episode of The Stacks. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today on the show, I'm talking with Samantha Irby. Samantha is the author of Needy and We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, and her latest book is a collection of comedic essays called Wow, No Thank You. The essays are as hilarious as they are insightful, and we talk today about why Samantha's work is so relatable, how she balances having a private life and writing essays that end up being extremely public, and a whole lot more. As a reminder, you can find everything Samantha and I discussed today in the link in the show notes. Okay, let's go. All right, everybody, I'm here with Samantha Irby. Her newest book is called Wow, No Thank You. Samantha, welcome to The Stacks.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Me too.
To be talking to someone other than the people who live in my house.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to be talking to you. This is an honor. Okay, I'm going to shut up.
No, I mean, you could just talk. It's fine. That's what I feel like. I just want to talk to everybody all day. For those of you at home, we're recording this early April. Samantha's book just came out. It's also, we're in the time of coronavirus, so we are both locked down in our homes, and she's like the first person I'm speaking to that's not related to me. and it just feels great. It feels like I have a new friend, and I need all the friends I can get.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's so weird because, like, my inclination has been to call people, but everyone is still in the pre-coronavirus, like, why are you calling me? Is it an emergency?
Oh,
and it's
really?
Like, well, no, I know you're home, so I'm calling to hear your voice.
I mean,
like, I called like my sister, and she was like, what? And I was like, hi.
I feel like the opposite. I have been scheduling so many phone calls with friends and random friends, and I'm FaceTiming everybody I've ever met. I'm like, hi, how are you? What are you doing? What are you having for dinner?
See, that's because the people in your life are nice. Everyone in mine, I'm like, hey, you want to jump on FaceTime? And they're like, for what? And I'm like, well, because I haven't seen you in a month, and it could be many more months. And they're like, text me. And I'm like, okay.
All right. FaceTime me anytime you want. I'm available for FaceTime. I see no adults besides my husband, but my husband is in an essential business, so he works out of the house a lot, and I'm trapped in the house with two infant twins. So any adult conversation,
Oh my God.
Did you read the news? Can you read? You can speak words. You don't just coo and shit your pants. I love you.
Yeah. Tell me about your teeth and your ability to walk.
Yeah.
I would love to hear about all those things these babies cannot do and don't have.
Can you hold your head up? Great. Love you.
Do you know all your colors?
Yeah.
Cool. Let's talk for 3 hours while these children are asleep.
Exactly. Okay. Let's actually talk about your book, because nobody cares about my baby's lack of color.
They
vision.
Do care.
Well,
they do.
I do. Well, I don't care.
Speak for me. No, I feel like if I was trapped with the baby all this time, I would grow quickly bored of all of their adorable tricks.
Yeah.
I'd be like, seen that one. Can you roll over yet?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, cool. You can kick. Awesome. Thanks. okay. Let's talk about your book. Wow. No, thank you. First of all, we always start here, which is basically tell the people about your book in about 30 seconds or less.
Okay. It is a book of funny essays and comedy bits about me and my anxiety and my extreme disappointment in life.
Yes, that's all true. It's very funny. I mean, you're one of the few people that I have ever read who writes funny and it reads funny even when I'm not listening to it or reading it out loud. Like, I can hear the joke even in my head. And I think that's so hard. So what I'm curious about is, how do you approach writing funny?
I think
I know that's like a really huge question, but
what do I do? So I think when I'm writing, it's really, and sometimes this comes across, this becomes very evident to me when I record the audiobook, that I write in a very stream of consciousness style, that should be better punctuated so that I can breathe in the right parts. But it truly is just like, you know, my brain kind of unspooling itself on the page. And I always just try to make myself laugh. I'm like, what is the most absurd piece of this thing I want to say? Or what are the absurd angles I could take on this? And how can I write about them while also making myself laugh? So I usually just, I have an idea for a thing. I come up with the ending first. Like, I always know how it's going to end. Like, but I cannot write a thing if I don't know where it's going. I had a couple of things that I started for this book and I couldn't figure out how to wrap them up or what I wanted to say. So they didn't make it in. And then we'll see if I'm still interested in them or if anyone wants to buy them in the next collection, if I can figure it out. But usually it's just like, I have an idea, I know where I want it to go, and then I just kind of like bled everything out on the page.
Well, that's such an interesting idea. I'm curious then, how do you sell a book of essays? Do you sell like four essays and then say, I'll fill in the rest? Or do you have to pitch all of the essays? Or how does that work?
Well, so with my last original book, We're Never Meeting in Real Life, I had put out a book. I put out my first book, Meaty, on an indie press, you know, that sold like 13 copies. I shouldn't sell myself short. It did pretty well, considering that it was like done on a small regional press. And my agent found that book and like reached out to me, because I didn't have an agent or anything when I did that, and was like, hey, I love this. Have you thought about doing it again on a big publisher? And I was like, absolutely not. But then he convinced me to do it again. So we had kind of that book as an example, and I wrote a full like detailed outline, like 12, 15 potential like essays or pieces. And then I wrote four of them. Like, I had four fully fleshed out. This is my style. Like, this is variations on my style. This is what I want to do. This is what the rest of these would be like. Went to my agent, like, put everything together. He tightened them up. He wrote, like, a cover letter and then sent those out to editors. And then he just waited for their feedback. And there was like kind of a little auction, I think. We had a few places that were interested. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. We had a few places that were interested. And then we went with the one where I loved everyone that I talked to. Like, anybody who's excited about me, I'm excited about them. Yes. So I was like, yes, I love you. And then the next call, I was like, oh my God, I love you too. So we ultimately went with the place that was offering the most money, of course. And then I, then that book came, I wrote the rest of the book and then it came out. So for this one, we didn't, I didn't have to do much because that one sold really well. Mm-hmm. And like, they were like, okay, stay with us, please. we'll, this is the amount of money we'll give you. Just give us an idea of maybe what you would do. And I, because I'm a troll, was like, what if we just gave him a paper that was like, same old soup, just reheated. And my agent is like, no, this is a professional business. You have to write some shit down. So I did another like perspective outline, but it was really like, because my first two books were like, a lot of it was like summarizing the past or right. drawing things from the past. And this one was going to be like, okay, this is where I'm at now. These are things that are happening or could happen or whatever. So I wrote this outline that was like, okay, here are some things that I think are going to happen. Some ideas that I'd like to get into. Like, I knew I was moving to Michigan. I might have already lived in Michigan, but I was like, you know, I live in this house I don't know how to take care of. I'll write about that. And I, you know, I, what else? Like, I live with these kids. I've never done that before. I'll probably write about that. So it, right. it was definitely more elegant than that. And so I turned in the outline and they were like, great. Yeah, let's do it again. So the book that I ended up writing deviated very far from the outline I turned in. Because at the time, I didn't have the shrill job. Mm. So I didn't know I was going to be writing about working on a TV show. Right. I hadn't yet had my awkward friend lunch, like trying to make new friends in town.
Right.
I'm like, we didn't have the new cat yet. So all of these things happen. And I was like, okay, I'm going to write about that. Okay. That would be good in the book. All right. I'm going to write about that. So then some of the other things I pitched, I was like, well, that'll go on the back burner. I want to write about these things.
Right.
And they're like, my publisher is very cool. They are, you know, they're just, my editor is just like, oh, yeah, whatever, dude, whatever you want to do, just make sure it's turned in by this day. And it wasn't, but she trusted me and I turned, you know, some good stuff in after the date. I feel like if it's good and funny, I can make up for right. being a little tardy.
Right.
But yeah, that was a very long way of explaining that I write these outlines that, I mean, I never look at them again, which oh. is also, I'm like, what did I say I was going to do? Who cares? I'm doing this. So I might like go back and look at them if we pitch another book and see if there's anything to cull from those that I didn't work on. I do remember in pitching this last book, I was like, you know, I really want to like get into, I want to see a psychic and get into crystals and go to a sound bath and like get my yoni steamed, like all that woo woo kind of shit.
Yeah, you sound and, like you're living in LA like me. Like, so
well,
LA.
So I wanted to, I did some of that stuff when I was in LA working on Shrill, but right. I didn't get to all of it. So then I was like, I don't want to half-ass it. I don't want to half yoni it. I want to really, if I write about it, I really want to do it. So like that one got moved to the back burner, but
right.
basically I just am like, here are some things I'm thinking about. What say you? Do you want to write me a check? and like last time they said yes, I imagine if we do this again, it'll be more of the same. I have some ideas percolating, some things that like my editor was like, you know, this book doesn't have as much sex in it. And I was like, yeah, bitch, I'm 40 years old. There's not as much sex in my life. Like, what are you talking about? Have you not hit that wall yet? So I want to maybe write some sexy stuff and some other stuff that we didn't get to. And yeah, I'll just, I mean, maybe this time I can write more of the same with a question mark and turn it in rather than writing an outline.
Yeah, I feel like your agent can just like cool it. I feel like you've proven yourself. Like, let's not make
I
names.
Mean, I think, you know, I think, I don't know what I could get away with, but I feel like we should at least try.
Yeah.
Just as a joke, like I'll write a full outline, you know, like full paragraphs with what I intend to do. But first, let's just like send them a sheet of paper that's like, more of this? What do you think? And then if they're like, you guys, this is Penguin Random House. Like, this isn't like Joe's books. And then we'll give them the real one. But I don't know. People don't like to play as much as I like to play because this is serious business. So, but we'll see. I might try it.
You should definitely like, try it and just see, because if it works, then you know you never have to write an outline again.
I know.
Like, if you get away with it, you know that your life just got that much easier.
Yeah. I mean, I think they know at this point, like when you do a thing like, you know, personal, I hate the term personal essays, but when you do a thing like personal essays, they're just, I mean, it's not like I can really deviate from the form too much. Like, I do like to play around with like the style and like writing lists and that kind of thing. But I mean, it's not going to stray too far from that. I'm not going to be writing like speculative fiction. It's,
do you
it's
think you really, would ever? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I'm just curious if you think you'd ever write anything that wasn't essays, like maybe something more like a memoir, or do you think that this is just your kind of your sweet spot and you like to live in this world? Obviously, you write for TV, but like your books.
I think that I don't think I would not do this because it has worked. And I am a big fan of like, why reinvent the wheel? If I have like a, you know, if I have a scam that's paying off, then why rock the boat? But I do have like a couple chapters of a novel I've been playing with for some time. But the gag is that I cannot decide on, you know how you need to have like two major conflicts? I can't decide on the second conflict, so basically the ending, and so I keep setting it aside because I'm like, I don't know where that's going, and I can't write until I know where it's going. So if I ever figure it out, what I truly need to do is like find a freelance editor or like a writing coach or something and like pay them to work it out with me. And so maybe I'll do that. Cause I, as soon as like we went on lockdown, I was like, you know what I should do? Start thinking about that novel again.
Right.
But like, no one wants to read my like, oh, I was cooped up, so I, you know, I decided to dust this old thing off. But we'll see how desperate it gets around here. I might do it.
Wasn't there that horrible tweet going around that was like, William Shakespeare wrote King Lear while he was on lockdown?
Oh my God. First of all, can you imagine, I mean, one, ever giving anyone any advice at any time, but two, like giving like that very specific kind of shamey, you should be doing this, like shouting that into the void. I do not understand.
Wow.
I
do not understand.
Yes. See, it works for everything. I do not understand the impulse truly to tell anyone to do anything, but especially not
right now.
Like, come on. Did Shakespeare have Netflix? No. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to watch Ozark. You be over there working on King Lear. I'm going to fucking watch TV.
Yeah. It's true. This has become such like a weird, shamey time. Like, in this passive aggressive way, not like, it's not so much the, you know, like calling out people. It's more like, oh, you didn't work on your novel today. Like, no, motherfucker, I didn't. And you can't even come tell me that because I'm on lockdown and so are you. So stay in your house and leave me alone.
Right. If I am averse to any of that, any telling anyone anything, especially when you are not an expert. But like, if there were ever anyone who said something like that and proved that they had done it, then I'd maybe listen. Right. Like, if you show me the 200 pages of your manuscript that you worked on today, then maybe I'll follow your advice or like heed your, you know, listen to your criticism about what I'm doing. But it's always someone like who doesn't have shit to show for it, telling you what to do. Or if they have accomplished something, they never tell you like the way that they got there. Like, if I was going to tell someone to write a book right now, I'd be like, you know how I did it? I quit my job. I stopped living in a big city. I moved to a smaller town that costs less and got married to a person who has health insurance and could afford for me to maybe not make any money. And then I watched TV a lot and then wrote in a panic at 2 a.m. And it's like, if you were ever transparent about what it takes, then you can tell people what to do.
Right.
But even I, with my transparency, I would never tell anyone to do that. Move to a town with no Thai food? No way. But that's what I had to do.
Kalamazoo sounds terrible.
It's so cute. It's very cute. There are two universities and it's like progressive. But if you are a fan of international cuisine, there's good Indian food, good Mediterranean food.
Okay.
But like, ain't no Thai food, no Filipino food, no Laotian food. You know, like all the stuff you just take for granted.
Right.
Like living in a big city. It's like, nope, none of that. Ugh. None of that. That's but you can get like craft cocktails and there are lots of breweries.
Okay.
So I don't want to hate on it, but that the sacrifice that I made was like delicious larb from a restaurant.
So good, so good. I don't know if I could do it, but you're a better person than me, obviously.
It's hard.
But you have a book now. You have books out in the world because of it, so it's a trade-off for sure.
Yes, yes.
Does your wife and or her children or your family or anybody, how do they feel about you writing super personal stuff that includes them? Are they totally down or are they sometimes like, can you actually not do that?
Well, her kids, because they are not mine, I don't go into detail about anything they do or say. And it's a shame because they're funny and bad and their fights are hilarious.
Right.
I mean, I'm obsessed with like sibling dynamics because I have sisters, but they're like 20, 17 and 15 years older than I am.
Right.
So it's not like really having sisters. Right. It's like having four moms. So the fights they get into, I'm like, man, I really are like listening to them talk to each other when they don't know you're listening is like really hilarious. You're going to sign that with your twins and you're gonna
wait.
it's so good. So like there are times when I'm like, oh, I wish I could write this down, but my biggest nightmare is like 10 years from now one of them coming to me and being like, hey, that time you wrote about, you know, fill in the blank, really destroyed my childhood.
Right.
And I wish you hadn't chronicled that for the whole world. So if you ask them, they'd be like, yes, I'd like her to write in excruciating detail everything I do and say that's like charming or funny or interesting. But I don't, because I can't make that choice for them to be public people. Like, it can't be on me. Like, I don't post them online or anything. Like, they have parents for that who can do that. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want that to be me. My wife, whose privacy I destroy every day, knew what she was getting into. She reached out to me after she read my first book and told me how much she loved it. I'm like, that book is like disgusting and exposes all of my secrets. There's no way you can read that and be like, sweetie, you're not allowed to. No, no. She knew.
Right. She knew.
She knew what she was getting into. So I do give her the courtesy. Honestly, you know, the thing she has a problem with the most is when I, for comedic effect, like, to make her more hippy dippy than she actually is when I'm like, you know, she fills the car with granola. She does, but she'll read that and be like, you know, I don't make my own kombucha. And I'm like, well, you used to. And it's funnier to say that you do. So that's going in. But I do give her, when I write about her, I try not to let anyone read anything I've written before I turn it in to the editor, because it really like gets in any sort of critique or criticism, like kind of clouds my, like I can't forget it. But I do, when I mention her, I am like, here, you can read this. Don't tell me what you think. Just tell me if there's a representation of you that feels too untrue.
Right.
And so we have struck a balance. I don't think she's ever asked me to change anything though.
Right.
She'll be like, I do not wear overalls that much. And I'm like, actually, you do.
Oh my. I'm trying to get more into overalls. So maybe she and I need to sit down and have a talk about overalls.
You should. She has been wearing, she just got a new pair of Dickies overalls. Okay. And they're very cute. She was in the garden the other day wearing them. And I was like, you know, this is like a horror movie, looking out, watching her in her overalls and like garden shoes, because like she has special, rinseable clogs,
right,
for
course,
gardening. I'm like, I don't know how this is my life, but those overalls are cute.
Do you ever find that for yourself? Do you ever get self-conscious or embarrassed or nervous before you publish something where you know you've talked like in detail? Because you get really, you know, personal, which I think is what makes people really connect to you and relate to you, is that it's kind of like no holds barred. But do you ever feel like when you're writing it, I definitely shouldn't be saying this, or like, this is TMI, or does that ever cross your mind? Or are you just like, I'm an open book and this is me?
Sometimes. Well, there's nothing I put or I would put in a book that I would be like, that I wouldn't put on the news, right? Because when you write a book, especially like once I started publishing at Vintage, and like, I know this book is going everywhere. And then I got like an international deal. And yes, there are people like on other continents reading this book.
Right.
It's like, I know people are going to ask. So if I put it in a book, it's something I have already processed that I wouldn't mind talking about in front of an audience. Because who wants to talk to the author who's like, put all their secrets in the book, and then you're like, so what about? And they're like, oh, I don't talk about that.
Right.
Well,
right.
Bitch, are you fucking kidding? Then you shouldn't have written it. So, I would never write about something that I would not want to talk about ad nauseum. Because that's what you do. The book comes out and then you talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. And then, you know, finally you can stop talking about it.
Right.
But then like everything's, you know, everyone knows everything. Sometimes I think because if I ever got any feedback that was like, I mean, first thing, like my parents are dead. So there's no like family pressure to like keep all the, like there's no, you're going to embarrass us, or I don't have any of that kind of pressure. And then if I ever had feedback that wasn't largely positive, if I wasn't getting feedback from people that was like, thank you for talking about this, I relate to this, I have IBS, or my period is weird, or I've been dumped you know, 700 times, just like you have, or whatever it is. If I wasn't getting feedback from people who were like, thank you for doing this, I related to this, this made me like, I am always trying to take myself less and less seriously. Cause mm-hmm. like, that's where, like when the depression is really bad, when it's like, oh God, I can't, what's on the other side of this? It's like, if I can laugh at it, then I can start kind of like pulling myself out of it. So ultimately, I think like telling people about all my stuff is like the great equalizer. And I think it comes from a place of, this is just now coming to me. So if it's not, if I'm not saying it as eloquently as possible, please forgive me. But like, it took me a while, I think well into adulthood, to understand that what you see is not always what it is. Meaning, like, I was comparing myself and my struggles to people who had advantages I didn't have that they didn't talk about, right? So, like, I had to drop out of college because, like, my parents died, but also there was nowhere for me to go on summer break, and I didn't have the money, and I needed to just work and start building my life as an adult. And it's like, I can't feel bad about my friends whose parents like paid for them to go to Yale. I'm not mad at them, but I also can't compare myself to them. And so I think when I got to the point where I was like, oh, people have all sorts of secret advantages. Like many people I know are living in houses that their parents bought, or that their parents at least helped for the down payment with. And I don't begrudge them any of that, but I'm not going to be feeling bad comparing my hard scrabble, you know, whatever I was able to like pull together out of the trash can to their lives. And so I think one of the things I try to do in my work is to be like, okay, so this may be the image that you have that I'm funny and put together, but like, look at this like anxiety spiral that I'm constantly in, or like, yes, we have a house, but it's falling apart and I don't know how to take care of it, or, you know, like, or, and like, this is what it's worth. Like, you know, cause like no one on Instagram is like, this house in the sticks cost $105,000, but I'll say that so that you don't feel bad about your house. I think for me, it's like the greatest connector between me and people has been just being like, look, I'm struggling too, and here are the exact ways, and don't ever be fooled by like what you see. So to go all the way back to your question that you asked 2 hours ago while I was rambling, since I've rambled, even if it's uncomfortable, like in this book, I read about how the IRS came down on me because I didn't understand that I needed to pay freelance taxes. That is not like a hilarious thing to one, have happened to you, or to admit to people that you're like, you know, I was 38 before I discovered like what a 1099 really is. And that like the government dips into my bank account every month because like I didn't understand a fundamental part of being an adult, like a self-employed adult. But it's like, someone somewhere is reading that and either being like, okay, I need to learn how to pay my freelance taxes, or is being like, oh, look, this happened to me too. I can relate to this person. I feel like there are far more people who, like, if we are just honest about the little ways in which we are struggling, I think, and it's so like hacky to talk about like social media or whatever, but we do get a front row seat to the things people want to show us. And that's great. I love a curated, like, you know, beautiful feed as much as the next person. But I feel like for me, it's important to be like, okay, just out of frame, is a pile of bills that I forgot to pay. And that's why, like, my credit score was 200, you know, right. You know what I mean? And I don't even think everyone has to do that. Like, I don't care what other people do, but for me, it feels like important. And I have always, like, even before I was writing, I've always been the kind of person who's been like, you know, this car I'm driving costs $600. So please don't judge that it doesn't have any heat or whatever the thing was. I was always like very transparent about like, this is how I'm struggling. Do with that information what you will.
Right.
But like, but just know like who and what you're dealing with.
Yeah, I do think that is why so many people can connect with you. I think that that transparency, like you feel like a friend, or maybe not a friend, but a teacher or a sibling or something. There's a connection in your honesty because so few people are honest and open about the things that are kind of embarrassing or awkward or feel stupid in the moment. And then you realize, oh, nobody's doing this right. You know, like Samantha Irby's not doing this right. I'm not doing this right. Turns out this is an impossible task. So I do think that you're definitely on to something with that. I want to talk about the title and the cover of this book and all of your books, because I know that you did Meaty and it was with another publisher, but then when it came out again with Vintage, it was kind of, they all match, the three of them now. How did that, how does that come to be for you?
Well, this is going to be the most disappointing of all my answers.
I mean,
depending on your standards for disappointment, but I have very little to do with that. Here, in all transparency, I wish that I could say that I like called up the editor and said, you know what I would like? I think it should be bright yellow, and I think there should be a cat on it, and this should be the typeface. They have an art director and a designer who they sent, so We're Never Meeting was my first book with Vintage, and my editor at the time was this woman named Andrea, who I really loved. But then she, what is she doing now? She quit to be a writer. So I was sad to lose her, but I'm happy to read whatever she's going to put out in the world. Anyway, so the designer and the art director sent the cover to Andrea, and Andrea's like, hey, this is a cover. We really like it. What do you think? And I initially was like, I don't know, man. Like, is that really like, I was like, oh my God, are people going to think like I'm a weird cat lady? Or like, does it vibe with the stuff I've said? But also, I'm very good at, taking a back seat and admitting what I don't know. I'm like, the publisher has like people who salespeople and many executives, and they watch trends and they know what sells. You know, I don't know any of that shit. So I was like, okay, you think like everybody voted and yellow cover with the slimy cat was the decision? Great. So then when they got Meaty, I voted for a different, because the original Meaty has a kind of wild looking chicken on the cover, and I voted for another chicken. And so we saw some mock-ups, and there was like, and because the first cat was a baby, they did a chick, and then there was the baby hedgehog. And I'm not sure if there was another one, but like of the options, the hedgehog looked like the cutest, and like they made its little face mad. Like if you look really closely, all the animals like look kind of like disgruntled.
Right.
And then when there's two like that, what are we gonna like break the theme? So they sent this one, and they sent a green cover with the bunny, a kind of electric blue cover with the bunny, and then a green cover with the dog with a pug puppy, and a blue one with a pug puppy. And we decided that like this kind of like fat, angry bunny was the way. So none of it, I wish, there are no artistic bones in my body. I wish I could say that I had anything to do with it other than being like, I think that one. And then them patting me on the head and being like, oh, whatever, we're going to pick what we're picking.
Like, nice try.
Yeah. You are responsible for what's on the inside and we'll take care of what's on the outside. Right. And as for the titles, so I wanted to call We're Never Meeting in Real Life. I wanted to call that book Everything is Garbage. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I was like, you know, my audience, like, will get this. They know. But the editor was like, no, I think that's, like, too negative and will scare people off. And again, I concede to the expert. So I was like, okay, girl, whatever. So then she came up with a bunch of titles. And, like, We Are Never Meeting in Real Life was one that she came up with. And I was like, I don't know that there's anything in the book that really speaks to that title, but why don't I write you? Like, why don't I write something? Like, and then it was, that was fun for me because all I need is an ending. So I just had to think, like, how do we get to We're Never Meeting in Real Life? And I was like, okay, I'm going to write about being an anxious person who would rather talk to 1,000 people on the phone than meet 10 people, you know, at any sort of gathering. So that was that one. And then with this one, I learned early not to have my heart set on a title. So we pitched it without a title. And then my new editor and I, who she had worked on the re-release of Meaty. Okay. So we already like had a good relationship. And she, her idea, which I thought was really dope, was she was like, as I'm reading each essay, I'm going to pull out phrases that I think would make good titles. And so she sent me a list, and there was one at some point in here I had written, wow, sir, no, thank you. And she pulled that out and I was like, oh, that's great. We took out the sir, because I don't need. If men are going to buy this book, then great. Let them buy it. And then once they read it, they'll see that they were tricked into buying a man-hating lesbian book or whatever. So we took the sir out of the title. And then it just, and again, like, she, even if she and I love it, you know, there are
other people,
executive editors, and there are sales people. And like there's a whole hierarchy of people who like have to like that book, that title, and want to sell it and want to like, you know, work hard to get it out there. So it has to like feel like a group effort, but everyone loved the title. So we went with it.
I love that. Okay. I have some questions for you about how you write or the space in which you create for yourself. So my favorite question and the most important question that I ask every author on this show is, what are your go-to writing snacks and beverages?
Oh my God. Well, beverage number one, Diet Coke.
Yes.
I don't know what sort of crack cocaine they put in there, but it's so good. I don't even want a regular Coke ever anymore. There is nothing. Oh, and okay, if we really want to get super insane about it, I like to get the tiny, I think they're called like the sip cans.
Yes.
They're like half size.
I have some in my home currently. Oh, very important coronavirus quarantine beverage. Had one for lunch today with my Kraft macaroni and cheese. Don't mind me. God.
It's so good. And those little sippy cans are like just the right amount to stay cold entire time. Mm-hmm. So I find sometimes with the big, like I just want it to truly like feel like I swallowed lightning. Like I just want it to be cold and like very crackly against my throat. And so those little cans are like the perfect amount for it to be cold and like cause you to seize up because it's so like sharp. It's like swallowing knives. So that's my beverage. And my snacks, so sadly, I just had to like, I didn't have to, but I decided to go gluten-free, which is a thing. I don't have celiac disease because, you know, we tested for that with all my IBS stuff. But I had this nutritionist who was like, you know, just try it. Some people have gluten sensitivities, which you don't find until like you eliminate them. So I was like, okay, you whack job, I'll try it. And then I did it and like my guts were like, yay. It was like, even like eating cheese or milk, because she was like, sometimes a gluten sensitivity will make a lactose, like will create a lactose sensitivity. Please, everyone, I'm not a doctor. I don't even know if this lady is a doctor. Don't follow. This is not medical advice. This is just something I'm doing. But I stopped eating gluten. And so that was very like sad. So I switched to, I eat these things. I used to eat pretzels. Okay. I'm like peanut butter pretzels. But now I eat these crackers called Nut Thins, and they are just like salty. They're little discs that are like made of nuts. They're very crunchy and they're very salty and delicious. Also, I really love Terra chips.
Beets and sweets is delish.
Oh my god, I had some of the Mediterranean kind earlier. So good. And my other gluten-free snack, so the thing about going gluten-free is you have to kind of like erase from your memory what actual like cookies and shit is supposed to taste like. Otherwise you'll just be disappointed. Like it's like, this is good for a gluten-free, you know, for made of rice flour. So the Tate's gluten-free, both the chocolate chip and the oatmeal raisin are incredible. They're super thin and they're very crispy. And I'm usually not like a crispy cookie person, but these, they're so damn good. They are very, very good. So Tate's, Tara's, and Nut Thins. Okay. Those are my three.
And then when you're writing, are you able to like listen to music? And what sort of stuff were you personally reading or watching or listening to while you were kind of making this book happen? What was in your cultural lexicon, if you will?
I listen only to slow, depressing music when I'm writing. I like to put one sad song on repeat in my headphones so that it becomes okay. So it can't be upbeat because then I'll like sing and dance.
Right, sure, of course.
And if the song changes, then my brain is like, what's this song?
I see.
What's this song? I have to create like a wall of sound.
Is that per essay or is that for the whole book?
No, it's per essay or even per writing session.
Got it.
Like if I'm like sitting down tonight to write something, I'm going to put on The National before today and like just put that on repeat until I close the laptop. And then it's like another, I make a playlist of like sad songs. I have a playlist called like Dudes to Cry To, which is one that I write to a lot. So
what's on that? Give us like two or three.
Oh my God. Moses Sumney, like anything of his. There's James Blake.
Okay.
I love a lot of James, like Radiohead.
Okay.
Radiohead has very good, like, there's a song, a Radiohead song called Go Slowly. I was just listening to it earlier today on repeat. Tom York does that like whining, like keening kind of sound that is very soothing. So, look for it on Spotify. It's public.
I'll link to this and everything else in the show.
Oh my God. Okay, great. Right. So everyone should be weeping along with me.
Yes.
So if I'm listening to music, that's it. If I like have the iPad on, because I like to have, you know, kind of a picture in picture laptop and iPad situation. Okay. One of my go-tos this book was Top Chef.
Okay.
Specifically the Boston season.
Okay.
I watched a lot of that just on repeat. Top Chef is very soothing to me. And two movies, Gone Girl.
Yeah.
I watched Gone Girl a lot. I love the book.
Yes.
I love the book. Reread it regularly. Love the book. The Social Network.
My husband
which are
was
both,
literally just watching that before I kicked him out of the room to talk to you.
He has incredible taste. I think they're both like Fincher, like dark,
yeah,
ominous. They don't have music that gets in the way. I love a talky movie. I love a Sorkin talky kind of like A Few Good Men. I could watch that on a loop, like just walking and talking. That's my thing. So those two. And I like to read fiction when I'm writing. I cannot, and in general, I skew much more toward fiction than other things. But if I read someone else's essays, I find myself either feeling intimidated, like, what I do is not as good as what this person does. I should stop.
Right.
Or I find myself like mimicking their voice a little, or like if they have bits or jokes, I'll find that in my, like, I'll reread my stuff and be like, oh, okay, I gotta stop reading R. Eric Thomas while I'm working on this because I am sounding like him and I don't want to. This needs to sound like me. And so I read with this book, there's this writer that I'm obsessed with named Luisa Luna. And she has written these two, she's written tons of books, but the two books I'm obsessed with are Two Girls Down and the sequel to that book called The Janes. I love a thriller, mystery, crime procedural, like anything in that vein, like that kind of propulsive courtroom draw, like give it all to me. And those two books I read while I was writing because it truly is an escape, but they're also so well written. The protagonist is like she's not a detective. She's a private investigator, is a woman, and she's like a bad bitch. And then she teams up with this kind of sad sack ex-detective who's like charming and you just want to hug him. I mean, it really like flips all my buttons for what I want in a book. I want a like, will they or won't they situation. I want a horrific crime. I want someone to solve that crime. Yeah. So her books were a great comfort to me while I was like, you know, when like I hit the point where I was like, okay, I'm going to throw this laptop in the garbage. I have to read someone else's words I will die.
Okay. That's good. That's not at all what I read, but in this like weird COVID-y time where I'm not reading anything that I normally read and I'm reading everything the opposite. And I was reading a thriller that I was kind of into and I've been reading YA that I've been into and romance.
Oh yeah.
Which is
can I add one more for you personally, but other people, if they want, I don't know if you have read Mary H.K. Choi's Emergency Contact.
I have not, but you're the second or third person to specifically tell me to read her, so I'm going to.
I love her. She writes in a way that is like so real. Like my fear with YA is always like, you know, do I sound like I am imitating a cool teen? You
know?
No one wants that. I'm like, who would ever want to do that? And she writes young people, both of her books. I just reread Permanent Record. Mm. She writes in a way that it feels so authentic, but Emergency Contact was so, I mean, it's so great. So you should read.
Okay.
On a YA, it's YA and romance together.
Okay. I can't wait.
What's not to love? It's so good. It's so good.
Oh my God. I'm so excited. So I read Anna Kay, which is by Jenny Lee, and it's the modern retelling of Anna Karenina, which I've not read. And
oh my
it's
God.
Like Gossip Girl, New York, but teenage, you know, teenagers, but it's this retelling.
Love it.
And it was so good. And it's YA. And I'm obsessed with the book now. I think about it all the time. I started rewatching Gossip Girl. I just am like obsessed. So that sounds very exciting to me. I'm going to check it out. I have two more questions for you. One is, what is a word that you can never spell correctly on the first try?
Oh, recommendation.
That's my word. Oh my God. Anything with recommend, recommendation, recommending. Yeah. I don't know how many.
Think about it.
No, I can.
I have to think about it all the time. I'm like, two C's, one C. One C, two M's.
Not
how,
sure.
What do I do?
I could never know.
I just had to like do the triple check while sending an email. And I was like, it would give me a red line if I was wrong, wouldn't it? And yeah. I stared at it for like 10 minutes.
Oh my God, same word. Okay, here's my last question for you. Okay. I kind of did this, but just for people who really love Wow, No Thank You, they've read Meaty, they've read all your stuff. What mm-hmm. are some other books that you might recommend to them that are maybe in a similar vein or in conversation with, or things you think that they might enjoy?
Okay, well, I just mentioned to him, but Here For It yes. by R. Eric Thomas. I am obsessed with him. I'm obsessed with his L column. He writes a newsletter that is so, he is so funny. Even like sometimes I'll message him on Twitter and he is, oh God, he's so funny. I Can't Date Jesus by Michael Arsenault.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God.
He has a new book coming out next week. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michael is truly like, I don't know. I have gone from breathlessly following him on Twitter to like clawing my way into a friendship with him. He's so good, and he's so good at like analysis and journalism. I also am like extremely intrigued and impressed by people who can oscillate between like real journalism mm-hmm. and writing about themselves. I wrote a thing for Time Magazine about Lizzo mm-hmm. and when they asked me to do it, I was like, you know, I don't do journalism, right? And they were like, yeah, that's what we want. You can write it in your style. And I was like, okay, because otherwise I would have turned it down. Like, I do not know how to do that. So, or at least do it without being really snarky and personal, which may as well be first person. Mm-hmm. So him, anything Michael Arsenault, he is incredible. I'm trying to think, what else is...
Those are literally, I'm currently reading the new Michael Arsenault, and my next read is the R. Eric Thomas, which is just,
oh, good.
I'm in that zone right now.
Good. Those were two that I read as soon as I finished mine, because I couldn't read them during, and so as soon as I was done, I was like, okay, my two boyfriends are up next, and they're so funny and good. They're both Black gay men, but they're extremely different. Like, Michael is from Houston, and our Eric is from, I think, from the East Coast. I don't want to mess up the city, so I'm just gonna say East Coast. But like, those are two books that I think like would be, if I was gonna put a care package of essayists who think they're funny together, it would be my book, Eric's and Michael's, for sure.
Amazing. Well, Samantha, thank you so much for being here. I'm so grateful for joining us.
Of course.
And everybody at home, her newest book is called Wow, No Thank You. It's a collection of essays. You can get it wherever you get books. I encourage you to support your local independent bookstore, but you can get it anywhere you get your books. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
And we will see you guys in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you to Samantha for being my guest and to Angelina Venezia for helping coordinate this interview. Remember, the Stacks Book Club is reading Trust Exercise by Susan Choi in April. And we will be discussing the book with Brandon Taylor on our episode on April 29th. Find everything we discussed on today's show in the link in the show notes. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. Remember, our newest partner is Libro.fm, and you can use the code THESTACKS at checkout to get 3 audiobooks for the price of 1. And you'll be supporting your local bookstore. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please, please, please take a moment to rate and review this show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas, and I will see you in the stacks.